expert witness testimony, forensic pathologist.
The people would like to call Dr. Adela Gutierrez, Your Honor. Dr. Gutierrez, please come forward to be sworn. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you shall give in the cause now pending before you will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Doctor, would you tell us your full name, please, and spell both your names for the reporter?
My name is Gutierrez, G-U-T-I-E-R-R-E-Z. My first name is Adela, A-D-E-L-A.
Doctor, would you please tell us your employer and your occupation, please?
I'm a physician, pathologist, employed by the coroner's office in Santa Clara County.
How long have you been employed in that capacity, like that for this county?
Since January 1984.
I'm going to be asking you some questions in a few minutes, and at some point in time, I'm going to be asking you for a medical opinion. So before I do that, I should ask you to briefly outline for us your educational and your training background in pathology, please.
Well, my training in pathology has been at the Albany Medical College in New York, and at the University of British Columbia in Canada. I am board certified by the College of American Pathologists in both anatomic and clinical pathology, and I've been engaged in the practice of pathology since 1962. And as I mentioned before, I have been strictly involved with the forensic work ever since I joined the coroner's office in 1984.
As a part of your job in this county, do you perform post-mortem examinations of people, one of the principal purposes of which is determining cause of death?
Yes, sir.
About how many of those kinds of examinations have you conducted during your career?
Ever since I have been at this position, I have performed 2,500 autopsies.
And have you in fact qualified as what's called an expert witness in the courts of this county before today?
Yes, sir.
Would it be fair to say many times you have done that?
Yes, over 100, 120.
And I want to direct your attention back to November the 24th, 1990. Did you have an occasion to perform an autopsy on a woman by the name of Ruth Maris, and to then prepare an autopsy report concerning that autopsy?
Yes, sir, I did.
And I wonder if you would tell us, please, briefly, your findings of any apparent injuries and their relationships to the cause of death, in your opinion.
If I may, I have to refer to my report, which I prepared at the time of the autopsy, the number of which is 903281, which I assume you have a copy thereof.
Yes. And would referring to that report refresh your recollection about your findings?
Yes, sir.
And was that report actually dictated in part while you were performing the autopsy and completed shortly after?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, sir.
Basically, the injuries I have divided into two parts, the external injuries and the internal injuries. And the external injuries were relatively minimal. There were some bruise marks on the lateral aspect of the chest of the left side of the decedent, and some minor bruise marks on the left side of the neck. The internal injuries, starting from the head, I had some focal subgaleal hematoma, which means the collection of blood beneath the skull, but with no injury to the bones and internal structure of the skull. The neck, there was some focal recent hemorrhage near the thyroid cartilage, which means near the voice box, the upper neck. However, there was no damage to the hyoid bone, H-Y-O-I-D, and the other structures in that area. The chest showed some focal hemorrhage on the left side near the ribs number 10, number 9, number 10, number 11, and number 12. On the left side, as I said, but with no fractures of the bone. Going to the abdominal cavity, the significant finding was a large spleen, which had some lacerations. In other words, it was ruptured. And that was the cause of an accumulation of about 2 liters of blood within the abdominal cavity.
Doctor, from your findings, would it, at least in layman's terms, be accurate to say that Ms. Maris died from internal bleeding caused by her spleen being ruptured or lacerated?
Yes, sir.
Now, at one point in time in your testimony, you mentioned that there was a bruise mark on the left side of the chest. Could you relate, at least in terms of proximity, that bruising to the location of the spleen?
That area is actually related to the spleen beneath it. In other words, if I may demonstrate that area on my own body, it relates to the lateral aspect of the to the lower chest.
You'll have to show the judge because he's the finder of fact.
If I may, would be to the... I'm showing the lateral aspect of the chest wall, lower chest wall, which would be the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th ribs, and the spleen is sitting right beneath this area.
Doctor, what sort of thing, what sort of activity would you associate with the bruising that you saw there? And what sort of activity would you associate with something causing the spleen to lacerate or rupture?
These are most frequently related to some sort of a blunt trauma in that particular area.
And I'm not asking you to tell me what blunt trauma causes injuries, but could you give us examples of the kind of blunt trauma that could cause the bruising that you saw and the kind of blunt trauma that could cause the laceration of the...
Well, blunt trauma is a general term. Nonspecific, it relates to any type of injury which does not cut through the skin. It can happen by any time of physical altercation. It can happen by hitting some blunt object. It cannot be as specific to, well, I mean, to mention any particular object hitting an individual, because there is no particular pattern that I could identify on the body. So I just have to refer to it as a general, in general terms, a blunt trauma.
Did you find any evidence in Ms. Mara's that she had been a rather consistent abuser of alcohol?
Well, one of the findings which would be rather significant, and I have described that on page 4 of my report, was the fact that the liver was cirrhotic. And this usually is seen because of the chronic consumption of alcohol, of alcoholic beverages. And by the same token, the spleen was enlarged, much larger than its usual size. And this is also secondary to the liver condition. In other words, when a case of so-called nutritional cirrhosis is advanced, there would be an enlargement of both the liver and the spleen.
Would that make the spleen more or less susceptible to the kind of damage that you saw to it?
I would say more susceptible.
There is in the textbooks in law school a theory called a thin skull plaintiff. That is somebody who is particularly susceptible to a kind of injury. Would you believe from your examination of Ms. Maris that she might have been more susceptible to a ruptured spleen than somebody who is not an alcohol abuser?
Yes, sir. Not only that, but she also was more susceptible to blood because of her liver problem.
Was some specimen of body fluid submitted for a blood alcohol content of Ms. Maris?
Yes, sir.
And what was her blood alcohol content?
Her blood alcohol was 0.2, 21%.
Doctor, Let me give you a hypothetical and ask you to give us your opinion. Supposing that someone were to describe something that started as a verbal altercation between Ms. Maris and someone else, and that this someone else is then described as having kicked her rather hard in the posterior twice, and then to have kicked her along her left side, and by kick I mean somehow with the foot, kick her in the side, and then take a shirt and wrap it around her neck and her head, and to shake that from side to side, keeping that hypothetical in mind. Would you plug that hypothetical into your findings to tell us whether that's consistent or inconsistent, or if you can tell?
Well, I would say consistent with the type of injuries that we have encountered in this particular case.
Now, specifically, going to the bruise on the side and the ruptured spleen underneath, is that the kind of injury that could have been caused by a somewhat forceful kick in the side, considering her condition?
Yes, sir.
Now, you mentioned some things under the scalp and some injuries in the neck and the hyoid area of the neck. Would those kind of injuries be consistent with the rather sketchy hypothetical I gave you about a shirt being wrapped around her head and would be shaking her head from side to side, that sort of thing?
The injuries to the neck are usually suggestive or of some sort of a choking effect, some sort of pressure, application of pressure on the neck. The hematoma that I mentioned under the scalp, that again is nonspecific. It can happen by hitting any blunt surface. But being on the top of the head, that makes it rather unusual, because if someone falls, we expect to see those type of injuries along the prominent or projected areas around the skull or the forehead, what we refer to as the hat band. But in this case, it was rather high on the top of the head.
Thank you, Doctor. I have no further questions.
Cross-examination of witness.
The lab tests you did in this case, they were blood and gastric, is that correct?
That would be on page 4 of your report, yes, sir.
Is that correct?
The specimen which I submitted was blood and gastric content, yes, sir.
What is gastric? What is a gastric sample?
Gastric is stomach content.
What is that? What is that designed to find out?
This is again part of the routine. We, in this case, the case of an unattended death, I just want to make sure that there was nothing unusual in the stomach, which by gross diagnosis, meaning by naked eye examination, I would miss. So it was submitted to the laboratory.
Now, what were the results of the gastric analysis?
They didn't do any gastric because it was not necessary.
So the only actual test that you submitted for analysis was the blood, is that correct?
I submitted 2 specimens, but only blood was tested, yes, sir.
And who determined that the gastric analysis was not necessary?
The gastric content, if it is suitable, and if you don't find anything in the blood, then they would proceed with that, but...
My question is, who made that determination? Was it your...
The laboratory, no.
Is it fair to say, Doctor, that the reasons for these tests, for example, blood analysis, would be to preserve evidence?
Usually to... In what respect?
For example, if you didn't take the blood analysis during the autopsy and you took it 2 months later, you would get a different reading, wouldn't you?
You do, but we never have the blood specimen 2 months later.
Right. So, is it fair to say that the reason why you take these blood lab samples at the time of the autopsy is to get a true and accurate reading of what was going on in the body at the time of death?
Exactly. But what is important is what we find in the blood, not in the stomach or the tissues.
And you use these findings from, for example, the blood, had blood work up to to assist you in your diagnosis, correct?
Usually this is the case, yes, sir.
Well, your interest in doing the autopsy is to do a full and complete autopsy, is that correct?
Depends on the case, yes, sir.
And are there some cases where you do not wish to do a full and complete autopsy?
Yes, sir.
Would that be cases, for example, where the cause of death is obvious, for example, in a bullet wound?
No, those cases, in fact, we do the complete autopsy. The cases whereby there is a genuine medical reason for a cause to die, say if someone had a history of heart problem or a doctor, the treating doctor, mentions myocardial infarction or any one of those natures, which is a bona fide reason for someone to die, then those cases, in effect, we don't even touch them.
Did you do a complete autopsy in this case?
Yes, sir. I have the report right here.
And did you conduct microscopic examination?
No, sir.
So no tissues were examined microscopically?
No, it's not necessary.
Why is that?
When I have a good reason for someone to die, and it's not an academic type of work that we perform, once that we are satisfied with our gross diagnosis, that means that examination of tissues by examining with the eyes, without putting it under the microscope and deciding that this individual had cirrhosis, for instance, that would be enough for us.
Is it your opinion, doctor, that microscopic examinations are not helpful? In other words, could not microscopic examinations pick up something that you would not pick up with the naked eye?
Not in this case, no, sir.
My question is, do you feel that microscopic examinations are not useful?
They are, but in academic work and in cases whereby we don't have a tangible reason for someone to die.
For example, in this case, you have a damaged organ, a spleen, for example.
Yes, sir.
That was not microscopically examined, is that correct?
No.
Even though there was evidence, as you say, of an enlarged spleen.
I explained to you that this individual had cirrhosis of the liver, and a combination of the cirrhosis and the enlarged spleen is usually encountered in cases of advanced nutritional cirrhosis.
Is it in your testimony that cirrhosis of the liver is the only way that a spleen could be enlarged? Would there not be other diseases of the spleen that could be detected microscopically?
It could be. But if there's no necessity to do a microscopic examination...
But your answer...
To come up to that...
Your answer is there could be other diseases that you could be detected microscopically.
Not necessarily.
So I take it the reason why you did not conduct microscopic examinations in this case was because you drew the conclusion at the time of the autopsy that it was not necessary, correct?
Exactly, yes, sir.
Were any organs preserved?
Yes, sir.
Which organs would be preserved?
Tissue represented samples from all organs, representing samples from all organs have been preserved.
In this case specifically, which tissues from which organs were preserved?
Starting from the head, a piece of the brain. From the neck, a piece of the thyroid, a hyoid bone, coming down to the lungs, a piece of lung, piece of heart, piece of liver, piece of spleen, piece of pancreas, and piece of kidney and adrenals.
Did you mention the spleen as well?
Yes, I did.
And the liver?
And the liver.
And again, none of those were microscopically examined?
None of these have been examined microscopically, and that is based on my judgment, professional judgment, that it was not necessary.
Now that they are preserved, can they be examined microscopically at this point in time?
They can be, yes.
And does the coroner's office have possession of those?
Yes, it does.
Is it fair to say that there's a margin of error in forensic pathology?
Well, I think in any profession or any line of work, there's a margin of error.
For example, there are variables involved, correct?
You may say that, yes, sir.
Accuracy of test?
No comment on that.
Why not, doctor?
Because the question is so vague, and I don't really understand why. What is the line of questioning? You want me to say that I have made errors?
That's not my point, doctor. That's not my point.
So then, in any line of work, I think there is a certain degree of error.
Fair enough. Now, getting to the external examination, you testified that there was a bruise on the deceased's neck. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Doctor, looking at what's been marked as Defense Exhibit A, would that be a picture from the autopsy?
Yes, sir. That's the picture that I have taken from the neck and the face of the deceased and has my initials on it.
Did you take that picture?
Yes.
What is the purpose of taking the pictures?
The picture is to document findings, and in this case, the bruise on the side of the neck usually is a sign of trauma and foul play, and this is to document it.
Now, I believe your testimony struck that. In your report, you indicate that the bruises are about 1 inch in diameter. Is that correct? I'm sorry, a half inch in diameter.
Measuring each a half inch in diameter, yes.
Now, you describe it in your report as two focal and well-defined bruise marks. Can you define, first of all, what focal means?
Focal is in contradiction from diffuse. When you have a well-defined area of some sort of injury, then you refer to it as a focal injury.
So this would be, in your own words, a well-defined bruise as opposed to a faint type of bruise, correct?
You may say that, yes.
Could you tell from your findings whether the deceased bruised easily? Can you make that type of determination?
I think I very superficially and briefly mentioned that an individual who suffers from liver ailment, you expect this person to have some sort of bleeding tendencies to some degree.
So a person with a liver disease, for example, caused by alcoholism, would possibly bruise easier.
Not bruising, bleeding easier.
Could they bruise easily?
I don't know.
Now, you also characterize the bruise on the neck as a focal recent hemorrhage, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Can you determine the age of those bruises?
That is a very difficult area. That's why I have mentioned recently. The reason is that for the first 3 or 4 days, usually the bruise stays reddish or purple, and you cannot say that this happened within half an hour, 24 hours, or 2 days. However, after that period of time, then there would be a certain degree of change in the appearance. The color of the bruise changes into greenish purple and eventually to yellow and brown, and then at that time we can sort of estimate the age. But during the first 2 or 3 days, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to determine the exact time that the injury has occurred.
Can you give an estimate?
No, sir. I just say recent.
You cannot estimate looking at the color of the bruises on Defense Exhibit A? Can you give us any type of range?
No, sir.
Is it possible that it could have happened, for example, 6 hours before the date of the incident? Strike that. 6 hours, for example, before the time of death?
It could have, but I have no idea.
A bruise cannot occur after death, correct?
Not at all, no, sir.
Is there any evidence of internal injuries as a result of the bruises to the neck?
I refer to the top of page 3, the first paragraph. There is focal recent hemorrhage near the thyroid cartilage.
Is the trachea damaged at all?
That, if you refer to the third line, it says there There is no evidence of trauma to the hyoid bone, the larynx, and the upper trachea.
Did you ever tell the coroner's investigator, Dick Miller, that the deceased had a broken trachea?
No, I don't recall that.
No?
No.
Now, the district attorney gave you a hypothetical regarding someone who would, for example, take a person's... Doctor, you're going to have to look at me for this one. For example, take a person's head with a cloth or something, put it on the person's head and move it around. Would that cause this type of bruising?
To the head or the neck?
The head.
I appreciate it if it is demonstrated a little more.
For example, if I took a cloth and I put it around the officer's forehead and made a motion like this, would that cause the focal type of bruising that we have on the neck?
If it is on the head, probably not. What I have here is more compatible with the pressure by fingers.
For example, would that be pressure by fingers in strangulation, or would it be pressure from a finger if it was to jab at a neck?
Either way.
Either way?
Yes.
So you're saying that this could be consistent with a strangulation type?
I think either compatible or suggestive. I never use the word consistent because that limits the possibilities.
But you would not rule out the possibility that that would be caused by, for example, a choking type of action?
That would be one very strong possibility.
That is not, those bruises are not a hickey, is that correct? You know what a hickey is, Doctor?
Yes, sir.
What is a hickey, for the record?
It's a result of kissing or very aggressively sucking on the tissue.
And your opinion is that it's not a hickey?
No, sir.
Why is that?
The pattern doesn't agree with that type of possibility.
Now, you also testified that there was a bruise on the deceased shoulder. Is that correct?
There is one bruise area which I see on the same photograph, around the left shoulder girdle.
And you're referring to the same photograph, Defense Exhibit A?
Yes, sir, on that particular photograph.
And this, the location, would be the anterior aspect of the left shoulder, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And could you point on your body where that would be?
My hand is slightly in front of the shoulder joint.
And you're referring to your left shoulder?
Left shoulder.
How many bruises are there on that left shoulder?
I can see only one.
Were any measurements taken?
On my report, there are no measurements. However, by looking at the photograph and the ruler...
Let me stop you there, Doctor. Why do you not have... Why did you not take measurements at the time of the autopsy?
Because this particular bruise is ill-defined. It's not as well-defined as the one that we talked about on the neck.
So in your opinion, referring to Defense Exhibit A, the bruise on the shoulder cannot be measured.
But it can be measured, but it's guessing, because the nature of the bruise is diffuse, and the measurement may not be that accurate.
And again, measurements were not taken?
Not on this particular bruise, no.
Now, you characterize this bruise as well as being recent, is that correct?
Yes.
Again, how do you determine that, being that this bruise is a little bit more faded than the bruise on the neck?
Depends on the nature of the injury. Depends on how the blunt trauma had been applied to the skin.
Can you estimate, for example, whether that bruise on the shoulder was received before or after the bruise on the neck?
No, I am unable to do so.
Is it possible, Doctor, that they could have occurred at the same time?
That's a good possibility, yes.
And is it possible that they could have, for example, occurred shortly after, before the time of death?
That is a possibility, yes.
Looking at that bruise, what is that consistent with? Is that consistent with, for example, a punch or a grab?
There is no particular pattern on that which enables me to come up with any well-defined opinion. I would say just an ill-defined bruise mark.
Were there any internal injuries as a result of that bruise?
The bruise mark implies that there should be some bleeding beneath that particular area.
Did you, in fact, find that?
I did not look for it.
You did not look for it?
No, sir.
Why not?
Because there was no particular damage. Let me proceed with the technique. When we open the chest in that area, what you have beneath is the heart and ribs. And I think that I have mentioned that the ribs are not broken. The bruise means bleeding within the skin, beneath the skin surface. And beneath that are the ribs. And I have already reported the ribs.